Hello, MDL. It's the eve of Block 6 opening up. So we're here, the Outliers, me and Coach Vic, ready to talk about some Group of Five action. Mr. Vic, how are you doing tonight?
I'm all right. How you doing?
Probably still a little too hyper, won't say why, but yeah, still kind of feeling high on the controller, I guess we'll say. But
I'm gonna say why, as a diehard Florida State fan, you definitely represented the Noles last night in prime time.
I'm gonna be honest with you. I had a neighbor come downstairs after the game asking if everything was okay. I got a little too loud, which is not like
Hey.
this is not like me. But yeah, I had a neighbor come. I was like, "Hey, just wanted to check on you, Sam. Everything okay?" Like, no, I'm good. Like, oh, because
That's
like you're usually super quiet and like hearing some commotion now, and they're just making sure things are good. Like, nah, I'm good. Didn't want to say why. Didn't want to be judged, but it's okay.
the intensity of a B, B and B game does that to you.
I see now. I definitely see. Well, we're here to talk about Group of Five. We've got two blocks left in the season, maybe some time, maybe a couple extra days, a week, pause week, so to speak, to get these games in. But we're a good chunk of the way through the season. Most teams are in the second half. So we're going to talk about what's going on in the with the little guys here. First thing that I wanted to bring up is a talking point we had in the last episode. Had a quite a list of teams that were still undefeated, and that list is dropping. Lost two more, and just wanted to talk about those teams, and maybe later on we'll talk about where they stand in the big picture. So the first one that I will bring up is Tulane. Got to see a chunk of the game before the festivities last night, and man, Charlotte came out on fire. Up 21-0 early on the road. So that was impressive to me. Tulane did get themselves back in the game. A touchdown late in the second quarter, along with the pick six, cut it to seven, but they just weren't able to fully catch up in the game. The defense struggled. Brown, 365 yards through the air. Brown receiving as well. So the Brown-to-Brown connection continuing to do work for Charlotte. So Tulane no longer undefeated.
Charlotte definitely had a sound game plan yesterday. They definitely took it to Tulane at Tulane. That's so not only is it a ranked upset, it's a road ranked upset. So that is huge for Charlotte. The other game that went down over the weekend was UTEP losing to Louisiana Tech. They were definitely beat. They were almost 35, but they were down 30-14 at the half. Louisiana Tech ran it, passed it, mainly passed it up and down the field on UTEP. They were definitely shut out in the second half. UTEP were. They, La Tech, created two key turnovers, and UTEP gave up 445 yards of offense, 330 through the air. Like I was saying, that first half, he really jammed it up and down the field, just dots everywhere, sideline, middle, backfield, screen, RPO, post, streak, whatever you could do. He did it in that first half.
Yeah, rough showing for UTEP in that one. Have to see if they can bounce back, but man, you hate to that first loss always sucks. It always does.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, with that being said, with those two teams being said, we still have some remaining undefeateds in the American. We have FAU and USF. FAU still has to play USF, Tulsa, and Charlotte. USF has to play Tulane, FAU, Charlotte, Tulsa, and Rice. They got a few more games that they didn't get in and pass blocks, as well as Central Michigan good old Dr. Bush is still undefeated as well. What do you think about Dr. Bush's chances of being undefeated?
Well, I think that I think they're looking better for sure. He's 7-0 right now. He just beat Miami of Ohio. And it was one of those games where he was able to get up early in the first half and just kind of salt it away at the end. You know, Miami of Ohio put up 14 points late in the game, but just keep everything in front of you, rally and tackle. Did a great job of just not giving up big plays and just letting the clock eat away. And Luke's has been really good for them. He's on the Heisman hopeful list. He had 121 yards in the game, two touchdowns, and so far this season, almost 1,600 total yards and 11 touchdowns. As he goes, the Chiefs offense goes. And right now, given his remaining schedule, as long as Luke can continue to do what he's doing, sprinkle in the pass play, a couple of RPOs here, it seems the pass plays that they have, everyone is gearing up to stop the run, and it's just opening things up for Emmanuel, just finding his targets, and hey, break a tackle, you're gone, make a move, you're gone. There's not enough help because everyone's loading up the box to stop Luke's. So if I had to be a betting man, I don't want to bet the house. I'm too scared of that. But as close to the house as I could, I'd bet on Central Michigan running the table.
As a betting man, I would too. I definitely would. And especially with Mary and Luke's, just as a hit out there, just get a few more touchdowns. He'll definitely be on the list. He's itching to be on the list, and he's gonna get there with a few more touchdowns. Do you see any of the two teams from the American coming out unscathed and undefeated when it's all said and done?
Oh, that is a tough one because Jumper has played really well. Like, that game is going to be a huge game when they meet up. I believe it's in the last block, FAU and USF. Huge game. Because whoever wins is going to be the front runner to host the AAC title game. So even if they were to rematch, being at home could be a huge help. It's just USF. They've been playing well. I would say arguably they've been playing better than FAU. But just the rest of the schedule is tougher for Jokers because you've got, like, that game is going to be big. Charlotte's offense is looking good. They both play Charlotte. They both play Tulsa. Rice is a sneaky one. Boss has been getting in his games. He's a sneaky guy because he does just enough defensively as a user. And then Tulane. How are they going to look coming off of a loss? Because not only did Tulane lose to Charlotte, they had a close game against North Texas as well. So are we having a midseason slump? Are they going to wake up from this? We'll have to see. But Tulane has definitely been explosive for a good chunk of the season, and defense has been making plays. That's still a scary game against for USF. I would say FAU just because of the schedule if I had to pick one.
I would actually say neither, to be honest with you. I would say neither. And to throw out a hot take, maybe it could be neither, and they still could be playing for a playoff spot in the conference title game.
Yeah, I wouldn't even call that a hot take. I think that could be a possibility. It just depends on if you're 11-1. I feel like if you're 10-2, that extra loss would be a fun conversation, we'll say. If you're going into, you know, that final committee meeting and you have, let's say, Chip at 13-0 and an AAC team at 11-2, what the conversation is there. Those two losses, we'll just have to see how those are valued. But I could agree with you for sure. A 12-1 team would be, they'd have a strong argument for getting that group of five spot for sure.
Yeah, especially if some of the big guys in the big conferences have a few losses, that committee is going to have a hell of a time trying to figure out what's what as far as the 12 team. They definitely going to have a huge job on their hands.
Oh, for sure. Well, those teams, you know, still prime contenders to get a group of five spot, but there's some other teams that are playing really well right now that could kind of muck things up for those guys. I just want to show them some love. First up, I'll bring up Tulsa, Texas fan. He has had a pretty solid season so far, 6-2. He's 4-0 in conference play, and he is also in the AAC. So while we're talking about FAU, we've been talking about Tulane and Charlotte and USF. He is right there, too. He's undefeated in the conference. He does have in his final block USF and FAU, so he really could play spoiler, not just for getting into the conference championship game, but for maybe even dodging or, you know, mucking up their playoff chances. And his offenses look good so far. 23rd in the NDL. Braylon Presley doing a great job lining up out wide. 39 receptions on the year, 9 touchdowns, and 725 yards. Defense bringing it to 20 interceptions. That's good for 13th in the NDL. Got any teams, Vic?
I do have another team. That other team that we mentioned earlier in the show, Charlotte. They're also undefeated in conference play. We just talked about the big win at Tulane. They also have FAU at USF. Boys, it is going to be a fight in the American. I love that, though. Everybody is basically playing everybody. I love that. The teams that are still left, they still play each other. They are 21st in the NDL in points scored. They score a lot of points. It's not confirmed that the person behind the team is Dale Jr. after that video, and then we had a Charlotte user do what he's doing. We just a little wink, wink there. But they're fourth in red zone TDs. The defense is definitely concerned. I would say overall, because they get scored upon quick. Also, looking at that game, I also looked at it too, the Tulane-Charlotte game. Tulane was able, you know, it was a turnover here and there, but Tulane was able to go up and down the field on Charlotte at will. You know, key third downs that they had, they were able to get, they were able to score at certain times. Charlotte just made the one or two necessary plays on defense to win, but you can't have that every single time you play a game, because you're going to have to actually dominate or just be good on defense against one of these good opponents to actually pull out the victory. Sometimes that 50-49 shootout doesn't go your way sometimes.
Yeah, and seeing how he has USF and FAU on the schedule, that defense is going to be tested. Like, man, when you got it, it's tough. Like, you have to fight to get to third down, and then they're converting at an over 60% rate. That's scary. That's very scary.
Yeah. Definitely.
Another team I did want to bring up, too, bring up the Conference USA, your home. Bring up Louisiana Tech. So their record may not be as strong as some may would consider for this segment at 5-3, but they are 3-1. They knocked off previously undefeated UTEP. So with 3-1 in conference play and a leg up on UTEP in the head-to-head, trying to put themselves in the conference game picture. And very important to get that win, because he's coming off of back-to-back losses to Middle Tennessee and Central Michigan. So you're thinking, you know, maybe this is where you start to slide back. But he's able to bounce back by knocking off the team atop the conference. And he does have a big game coming up still against Jacksonville State. So get a win there. He has Western Kentucky left on his schedule in terms of conference play. You might find Louisiana Tech in the conference championship game. The only question mark that I have, and we'll have to see, is late in the season, we're still getting some new coaches in, and they're being, you know, getting thrown into the group of five cluster. Will someone get Kennesaw State? And if so, that game is always scary. Pat was talking about it on BBB last night. I don't think it was BBB. I think it was in the live chat, or might have been PC. I can't remember. I know that Pat was talking about what happens when you have a coach come in. It might have been the live chat, because I think it was MJ Kemp. Like, just comes in and it's like, oh, it's a new coach. Cool. Totally have no idea how they play. And it's just a scary game. It always is. There's no game plan and you can't look at stats. Where are we just going in blind? So if that team gets filled, who takes them? What do they do? That could be a potential scary moment for Tech going down the stretch.
I can adjust to that, because my game against UTEP, I was his first game. I didn't know how he played. I didn't know anything about him. So, yeah, it can be a scary thought having a new user, not knowing how they play, come into the conference and probably spoil your chances at winning the conference.
Oh, yeah, definitely agree.
The last team up on the list here who could be a dark horse, old down in the Fun Belt, a.k.a. the Sun Belt, South Alabama, USA, if you want to prefer. They are 4-2. They're coming off a loss, a huge loss, against UConn on the road, 35-7. Gio Lopez is doing his thing with 12 touchdowns to 6 interceptions with a 66 completion percentage there. They're doing good right now. Like I said, they haven't played. I don't think they played the full amount of games yet, but they're doing good. They do have a shutdown cornerback, though, in Amarion Fortenberry. He has 7 interceptions, and one of those for a touchdown. Who do you feel like out these four could compete for the conference championship, you think?
Oh, I'm scared because of the defense. I was going to go Charlotte. I really was. I'm going to go Tulsa, and here's why. Now, I know he does play USF and FAU, but essentially he controls his own fate. He's already undefeated in conference play. If he was able to win those games, he's in. One is on the road, one's at home. I don't remember which is which, though. But he's been passing the ball efficiently, and the defense has been making plays. And he's a veteran coach. I would put more trust in the vet, because I have played TFAN a handful of times over our time in the NDL. And you just, when you have those games, you know, you've played for over 15 seasons and you can just say, hey, I'm in a tight game. I need to come up with a score. I need to come up with a stop. Where does that confidence come from? Where do you calm the nerves? He has a bunch of games that he can pull from and say, hey, I got it done in this moment. I was able to do it against this coach. I was able to do it against this team, even though the context of the game, things aren't going well. I just will put more trust in the vet because they've been there more. Charlotte still scares me in that sense because he's still new. And he hasn't been battle tested yet. I think Texas fan has been. So I'll go with Tulsa.
I will go with Charlotte, actually. I believe I picked them as a part of the media to be in the conference championship. I have to look back and see, but I've been a big fan of his the whole time. I love the way he plays. He put that pressure on him. Like, he's very aggressive. Like, if you think you're going to shut him down, you're probably not in that conference. And then it backfires on you. Then you get a little nervous because it's like, hey, this is Charlotte. Why am I not stopping him? And you at least got to put up 30 to even have a chance to defeat him. So I feel like even though he is a new user, I feel like he has no fear. That Tulane game really showed a lot to me, because he can go into anybody's place and he can knock them out. Plus, I feel like he has no fear, being that he's going to have to run the gauntlet, being that he plays basically everybody that's undefeated in the conference. So that no fear mentality is going to carry him a long way.
Yeah, you could almost argue the other way, that just the fact that you don't know any better works in your favor. Like, if you think of the playoffs, you always say it's great to have veteran leadership, guys that have been there, know how to get it done. The moment is not too big for them, versus the young team. They don't know any better. They don't know what it's like to fail. There is no pressure for them because they haven't had to experience it before. So they just, it's just kind of a different animal.
And so usually,
on a perspective.
And usually the don't know any better team actually advances forward. Look at, even though it's a different sport, look at the NFL. You had the Commanders, didn't know any better. The Bengals is a huge example. Didn't know any better, just came and beat Mahomes. The Lions didn't know any better, almost beat the 49ers the year previous. You know, teams that don't know any better usually do better than the teams that have a veteran presence, because they can feel the pressure. They know it's pressure. They know, hey, I got to do this. Being a young team, or being a young user, a user that hasn't gone through the struggle or gone through the grind of an NDL season, they don't know anybody. They're like, hey, we're just having fun. If we do it, we do it. If we don't, we don't. We're just playing it loose. Whereas a veteran could have a little pressure, be like, hey, I'm supposed to beat him.
Fair enough. Well, I know one thing we do know. There's probably a list of favorites. So for those that don't know, there are 12 spots for the college football playoffs. 5 go to the top conference champions, and then you have at-large bids. The group of 5 is guaranteed 1 spot. It's possible they can get 2, but the way the season is breaking out, I'm not of the belief that ends up happening. And then plus, there's another team I'm going to probably have to ask some confirmation for, because I'm going to have questions on what they're considered. But we don't have to talk about that today, because I need to do my research to prepare for that. Maybe say next week. Let's get a little farther in. But based on,
you could ask the question. I probably know who you're talking about, and I can answer it for you.
Well, I know they'd probably be considered Group of 5, even though they're not in a Group of 5 conference. But I would. We'll save that for next week. Let's talk about it next week, because we could have a segment on them. But what I do know is we have to have 1 spot. So if we're just looking at the conferences that we normally talk about, which would be the AAC, Conference USA, MAC, Sun Belt, and Mountain West, give me a favorite, and who, if today, just based off the resume today, who do you think gets that spot? And then a dark horse going forward, that if they play well down the stretch, could get that spot.
I believe the favorite to get the spot is Central Michigan, because they're the most likely to be undefeated, and they would be ranked high enough, I feel like. But I feel like the dark horse is the American champion, because I can see a scenario where the American champion with 1 loss going through the gauntlet that we now know that is the gauntlet of the American. It rivals any gauntlet that the power conferences may have outside of the SEC. So you would have the SEC as far as gauntlet of teams you have to go through. And then you would say the AAC is the next hardest gauntlet to go through, as far as group of teams that you got to go through to get to the conference championship. So I can see a 1-loss team potentially getting in front of Central Michigan, but the one loss versus undefeated talk would have to come into play at that point.
Yeah. Well,
what about you?
This is a tough one because then you have to factor, like, there's, man, I feel like I'm going to flip-flop on my answer, and that's what I was trying to avoid. It's a tough one for me because I feel like Central Michigan today and South Florida today are fairly equal. But, I'd probably give the nod lightly to South Florida just based on today. That's what we're going off of. The Memphis game, probably, you know, the biggest win that he has on the season to this point. Memphis is 2-4, but that is a high-powered offense, and they were able to outlast. You have one win. I mean, it's kind of tough because when you talk about Power Four, you have the win against Michigan State. You have wins against Pittsburgh, but they are not having great seasons either. So, like, it's better than a Group of Five win, but it's not like a substantial Power Four win either, if you know what I mean.
I feel like yes, I do. I do agree with that. I feel like more so that those two teams, FAU and USF, their benefit is what's ahead.
Yeah.
Not necessarily currently, but what's ahead. The what's ahead is the biggest factor for them.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I was trying to stay away from that in my answer for sure. But I will say the dark horse. I think we could run into an interesting scenario, and I'd be curious to see how things play out. I feel Chip is, like, solidly in the conversation. So we have three teams that are essentially in this conversation right now: FAU, USF, and Chip. My dark horse is Tulane. Now, yes, I know they do have a loss, but if they run the table, they will still finish 11-1. You get an AAC title game. By tiebreaker, they should. Maybe. We'd have to see, because that may factor into the answer too. Because if they go 11-1 and don't make the AAC title game based on the, you know, a bunch of people in a tiebreaker scenario, that doesn't help, because Chip, I feel like, would be able to jump over with that extra win in a conference championship. But if Tulane were to go 12-1, which is still a possibility, they're going to have to get that offense, like, they got to get it fine-tuned right away with the games ahead. But I still think Tulane is in the conversation too.
Tulane is definitely in the conversation. We would have to basically check out those tiebreakers scenarios to see what tiebreakers he would factor into if everybody has a loss, or if, you know, there's only one undefeated team with two or three teams with one conference loss. We would have to look at the conference tiebreakers. But he definitely could be a darker horse. You're right. He definitely can.
Well, now that we have that done, we can slightly start looking ahead. But the next block has a couple of games that are going to be interesting games. Some will be factors potentially in conference races. Some just matchups that I find interesting. So I'll start first. I will point out an AAC game, Memphis at Rice. Just mentioned Memphis. Traveling to Rice should be a fun game. Both teams have lost to Charlotte. But if we use that as kind of a way to evaluate the teams, Memphis was able to hang with them longer, put up more points, slow down that offense a bit more. But my concern for Memphis would be EJ Warner. He's had or sorry, for Rice would be EJ Warner. He's looked good at times and bad at times. He's got 12 touchdowns and 12 interceptions on the season. So Jekyll and Hyde, which version of him are you going to get? And they will need to protect the ball because Memphis is probably going to put up points. And for that reason, he's got to be efficient passing the ball. And then the X factor could be which run game is better. Connors get going for Rice. That opens up the play action. That takes the ball out of EJ's hands some to help, you know, lessen the opportunities for potential interceptions. Or does Anderson get going for Memphis? That means he's running, breaking play, big plays. That also means you're probably having to bring more pressure, which makes that dangerous Memphis passing attack even tougher to slow down.
Who do you got in that game?
I've been pretty high on Rice a lot. They also were one of my group of five picks in the media draft. But for this one, I'm going to go with Memphis. Like, I believe that Boss Ranger is a solid user, and he'll make some plays on the defensive side of the ball. But Memphis, just they have so many things you have to worry about on the offensive side. I just feel like they'll put up enough points early on, and Boss is just going to be chasing them. And that is what makes EJ very dangerous, because you're going to have to pass the ball. Interceptions will kill you in this game. So I think Memphis is going to get up early and just be able to kind of hold off Rice long enough to get the win.
I'm going to go with Memphis as well. I feel like the quarterback EJ Warner is too inconsistent for Boss Ranger. And I feel like it's going to be another up and down game for him. And Memphis is going to capitalize off those turnovers.
Yeah, that's not the team to go up and down against. Got to be consistent.
Definitely. A game I want to highlight in the Mountain West, which is Jeff Daddy, Chief Hono, in Hawaii against Black Rain and UNLV, the Go-Go Running Rebels. These coaches are definitely very familiar with each other. Not only are they NDL vets, they're Mountain West vets. They keep their teams together. Hawaii throws a lot. Passing game is just impeccable. UNLV, on the other hand, definitely does have the ground game. They suffered their heartbreaking loss against Boise State in one of their few first conference games for their first conference loss. Hawaii just suffered a loss last night to Washington State. They were inside of the 25 and had about 20 seconds left. And
you there, Vic? I think Vic muted himself. Or trying, maybe his headset died. Well, until he comes back, I can cover for him. Oh yeah, both teams had heartbreaking losses. The goal line stand by Boise State to beat UNLV. Hawaii getting the ball back late, trying to get the score to go ahead against Washington State and do an interception in the last 20 seconds in field goal range, but had to get a touchdown. Not able to get the job done. So for both teams, this is a big game, because whoever loses this game will get their second conference loss, and that potentially will play them out of a Mountain West Conference Championship bid. So it's really going to come down to a clash of styles. Which team will be able to dictate the pace? Will it be Hawaii with more of an up and down pace with the passing game? Will it force UNLV to pass? Will UNLV be able to run the ball really well, and maybe that gets Braden the press in the passing game? Or is it the X factor? Does Hawaii get the run game going? They've had a couple games they've run for over 100 yards, so maybe they get the run game going and that throws UNLV off. It'll be kind of interesting to see how that game plays out. All right. Vic is... Let's see if we can get him put back in here so we can get things back going. Does it look like it booted him out? You good now, Vic?
All right, I'm good now. I don't know what happened. Sorry, everybody.
Yeah, it's tech. Things happen. Not a big deal.
I'm sorry. What I was saying was the game last night was a great game. They were inside the 25 with about 20 seconds left and a timeout. I felt like he could have had three plays, but he took it all and got an interception in the end zone by Washington State. But he played him tough, and that's the most important thing there. I don't think anybody had that option, having a close game at the end between Hawaii and Washington State. The big X factor in that game is the clash of styles between UNLV's ground and pound, with Thomas leading the way with 677 yards and 7 TDs, and of course the air attack of Hawaii, with Schrager having over 2,000 yards and 12 TDs. Which part of the offense can get going first, early, and often? I feel like whoever jumps out on the lead first could win. I don't feel like a comeback is coming in this game. I just feel like whoever jumps out to the lead first is going to be the winner.
Oh, which team do you got?
I got Hawaii. Old Chief Pono, I believe in Hawaii.
Well, I have Hawaii as well. And I think the X factor, you say it's the clash of styles, and I agree. But I think there's one player that could make that kind of muck that up a little bit. And I think that's Cam Barfield with Hawaii, because he does have a couple of 100-yard games. I know Hawaii loves a pass, and he's going to pass that ball all over the field. But if Cam gets the ground game going too, that's just the extra thing that UNLV has to worry about. And that makes that passing game even that much more dangerous.
Definitely. Definitely. You're right about that. Who do you have?
Yeah, I've got Hawaii. I don't think it'll be a pretty game, but I think they'll be able to pull it out and they'll stay in the Mountain West hunt for one of those two bids for that championship game.
Gotcha.
Well, next up, we've got the Raging Cajuns at South Alabama. Big game in the Sun Belt, because the winner will be the front runner for that West Division getting into the title game. The question I have is, for Louisiana, which defense is going to show up? Is it the defense that got shutout wins against UAB and Texas State forcing turnovers? Or is it the defense that gave up 66 points to Louisiana Tech? Quite the difference. I'm sure the answer is somewhere in the middle. It's just how far to each extreme are we going to get in this game? And then South Alabama, the offense. What offense are we going to get? Is it the offense that scored 7 points against UConn? Or is it the offense that put up at least 40 points in three of the prior four games? So I'm not really sure which version of each team with that respective unit that we're going to see. But if I had to pick one, I'm going to put my faith in the offense, because offense stirs the stick in the NDL. So I'll take South Alabama. I think they'll get up big, and maybe we just see that Louisiana Tech defense, not the 66-point defense, but maybe a 30 or 35, and that's enough for South Alabama to get the win.
I got the Raging Cajuns in this one. I feel like their defense is going to be better than South Alabama's offense. Yeah, that's pretty basic take, but I feel like we're going to get somewhere in the middle. I feel like they're going to give up at least 20 points to South Alabama, but they're going to score 30 to 35. I feel like it's a 13 to 15 point victory for the Raging Cajuns. And now the last game that we have that's put into the spotlight, as we like to do. We like to put games in the spotlight, and this definitely is spotlight material. We have Charlotte at USF. This is one of the big circled games in the AAC and is a part of the G5 as well. Big circle game. Both offenses are playing well. Charlotte averages 35 a game. USF averages 43 a game. Charlotte are also on the road, just as they were against Tulane. So this is a similar type of approach that Coach Crash Carr is going to go with here. Like, he has to have that same mentality that he had against Tulane, against USF. Speaking of offenses and averages, the Charlotte offense averages 12 points in the second half. So will they continue to be a second half team and put up points, or will Jokers and USF adjust in the second half and limit those amount of points that he will have?
That should be
This
should be a really interesting game, because for this one, I actually went through and I was watching Charlotte's games in the first half and the second half. So they're averaging just a third of their points in the second half. Now, it made me a little concerned, because you have to get the context. So is it because they're up big and they're laying off the gas, or is it because of turnovers and they're just not able, you're playing a team, you're kind of figuring out, okay, I come in with game plan X, and then it always evolves based on what you're seeing. So is it that the other team is able to adjust to what they're doing, or is it that we're just trying to speed up the pace of the game and just get to the end and run the clock? I saw some concerning things for Charlotte with some turnovers and some third downs. Like, their conversion rate, I don't have the number in front of me, but they convert less on third down in the second half as well too. So for me, I know what you're going to ask, and my answer is USF, and it's because of the second half. My concern with Charlotte is teams are figuring out ways to slow them down in the second half, whether it's forcing turnovers or forcing punts. Charlotte is going to have to figure something out in this game, because USF is going to put up at least 40 points. I don't see how that doesn't happen. So in order to stay in this game, they have to keep scoring. They have to do it for four quarters. I just think USF will be able to do that easier. Not saying it's an easy game, but from their body of work, I just have more trust in USF to play for 28 minutes as opposed to Charlotte.
I'm going to go with USF. And it's because I feel like I agree with you. I feel like in the second half, he will adjust. I've watched a few of USF's games, and Coach Jokers adjusts to what the offense is doing in the second half. He may give up some points in that first half. It may be a high-scoring first half and a low-scoring second half, because he's going to adjust to what Charlotte is doing on the offense. He's going to make the right adjustments, and he's going to make sure to limit the amount of possessions and points that they have.
Yeah, I would not be surprised if Charlotte wins, but I think that this is going to be a really fun game to watch, and man, it sucks. I'm going to be back at work now. I really hope I'm not working during this game. You guys are going to make me take a lunch or randomly not feel good and find my way into the car so I can put this game on the phone or something. It should be a fun one to watch.
As long as it's not a random Monday through Friday game at noon, you should be receiving updates during the live chat on this game.
Yeah, that is nice too. Man, it's gonna feel so weird. I've been one of those people campaigning for games to play. Like, I'm bored. I'm at home. Someone play. Live chat is heating up. Let's just get a game so we can calm it down and cool it down. Now I'm gonna be like, oh, hold on, hold on, hold on. I want to see the game. Can you wait till I get home? Everything different now.
That's the side I've been on as a person who does work during the day. It's like some of the biggest games, especially last season, I felt like all of the big games was during the day and I could not watch them at all. And I have to watch the replay. I have to, ask somebody what happened and everything like that. So I'm kind of glad we're having more night games this go around because I'm able to watch everything and see what's what and who's doing well and who's not, doing well and stuff like that. And I'm able to do the update this thing that I've been doing in live chats. It's fun for me, so I'm going to continue to do it. And I know it's fun for everybody. I receive quite a bit of compliments for it, and I appreciate that. So I'm appreciative of more night games this go around.
Yeah, CG is right in chat. It says the night games are awesome though when we get three or four games at once and the chat is live. It definitely is. I see you updating. Normally of late, that's been the time that I've been waking up. So I'm waking up to all these games in action and just trying to get into seeing what's going on. Like, okay, I see the scores, but let me pull up the multi-twitch and start figuring out, okay, who has the ball, what's the score, and just switching back and forth between the games. Fun stuff. One of the best parts of the NDL for sure.
And like we talked about it before we came on, I do that just to give other people recognition. I'm not a me type of person. I don't know. Some people may think that in the live chat, but I'm not. I'm truly not a me type person. You can obviously see it if you watched every or listened to every episode of this. I rarely talk about myself. This is the most I'm actually talking about myself, and it's because I want to shed light onto others. That's basically the main thing I wanted to do with that, was shed light on the other. So nobody had that, well, who is this guy at the end of the year? Or who is that guy? Like we had Coach Andy at the end of last year, and he was Kennesaw State. And until the very end, no one knew what he was doing. No one knew that he was just secretly winning and just going about his day. But I saw that, and I saw a couple others as well. He was just a prime example, but I saw a couple of others do that as well. I'm like, well, their game's not getting shown any love. So let me show love to not only the G5 because we do this podcast, but to some of the lower power fours as well that might be in contention for a conference championship or a playoff spot when it comes to the Big Ten or the ACC or whoever it may be, just to give those players some love and to give those players some views on their game.
Yeah, it's so tough. I mean, you have game day, we've got PTD, you've got the official NDL podcast, you've got BBB, you've got us. There's just so much content with the NDL, but there's still only so much that we can go over because there's not enough time. We have like we're trying to keep it around an hour. PTD is around 30 minutes. Game day, they're trying to, focus on the big picture. Like, there's just so much in terms of story going on in the NDL every season, every conference, every team. It's really hard to be able to give people the spotlight. So doing that helps too, because it's just, especially in the moment as things are happening, not only does it give them some time to shine, but it also gets eyes on them, and those eyes could lead to them getting, some segments in some of the content. So it's good to see for sure.
Definitely. Definitely. And that brings us to our last topic of the day, which is, of course, we seen the stuff that's been going on in the live chat over the last week. It's been a lot of tension, little feuding, you know, stuff like that. But, you know, we just have a few words and a few takes and a few things to say when it comes to the new coaches, especially in the G5 conferences. Go ahead and start it off, Sid. You're the OG, so I defer to you.
Oh, now you're making me feel old. You sound like El Jefe now. Well, we're probably going to take different approaches on this, but my approach was I wanted to say welcome to all the new coaches, whether we've interacted before or we haven't, just as someone who's, I hate saying I'm a vet because it makes it sound different, but I'm just a member of the league just like you are. So I just want to say welcome to the league. We have a great thing going. I've been in this league since the PS2. While we were still, you know, some of us were on dial-up still. I've had a great time here. I've made some great friends here. I've had some awesome rivalries. The culture that the NDL has in any league, and I've been in a lot of leagues. I'll just put myself out there right now. I'm 39 years old. I've been playing in leagues online since NFL 2K1 on the Dreamcast. So, God, that makes me feel really old. I've been playing a long time. I've seen a lot of stuff. The NDL is heads and shoulders above any league I've ever been in. The culture we have here is second to none. So, what I wanted to say is this is a great opportunity to be a part of something really special. The vets are not your enemies. We are here to help. We do not view you as lesser than. We want to help you. So, whether it be playing scrimmages, asking for advice, if you need help with any of the quote-unquote duties such as poll votes, extended absence stuff, coach reports, if you have any issues. Like, I had someone message me while I was streaming a couple nights ago about, hey, our game is disconnected. I don't know what to do. Like, just stop what I was doing. Okay, this is the scenario you laid out. Cool. So play it like this. And then after the game is over, hit me back up and then I can guide you through what you need to do. Like, that's what we're here for. We're here to help you out. We want to help make this the best experience for you, because in the grand scheme of things, that makes it the best for everyone. I, more than anyone, hate when live chat is, right, because we're never going to agree. This was talked about on BBB last night. You have people coming from all walks of life, different ages, different stages in life. We have different opinions on stuff. We're not always going to agree, and that's okay. Just do it respectfully, and just try to remember that we're all here playing a video game. We're here to have fun. We're here to meet awesome people and just have a great time. So just, it'd be nice if live chat wasn't, there's definitely been some days where it just feels like, man, I don't even want to type anything in there because I don't want to be like, I don't want to be lumped into this. And I could see how that could be overwhelming for people that are new to the league. It doesn't reflect well at times on what we stand for. So just something for everybody to be mindful for. But as a whole, just wanted to welcome. I know we have a lot of people coming in, taking over some of the group of five teams. Just want to welcome you guys in. If you need anything, everyone is super friendly in this league. We're more than happy to help you.
And I just want to back up that claim as well. Welcome. I'm Vic. It stands for Victor, if you didn't know. I'm very helpful. I help out when I can. If you have a question, you can ask me at any time. If I don't know the answer, I will get the answer. So there's no need to worry about me not having the answer, because if I don't know the answer, I can get the answer. I'm helpful as well. Anytime you want to play a scrimmage or anything like that, I've helped a few people get their teams because they have to play a certain amount of scrimmages, and I'm open to play a scrimmage with anybody because I'm that helpful. I will get you your team. If you're lost in translation and don't have a team and don't know how to scrimmage anybody, if you're new and you listen to this later on, you can just DM me or hit me up, and I will definitely schedule a time or be available at that moment to do a scrimmage with you. Now, past all that, for new coaches, this is all the way through P4, G5, doesn't matter. Do what you have to do in the NDL as far as play the NDL way, do the extra things in the NDL. Don't skip past certain things. Don't skip past your player stats. Don't skip past your team stats. Don't skip past any recaps. You want as many points as you can. And because you're going to need those points, especially being a G5. Now, this is all for my new members in the G5. G5 people, you need as many points as you can. So definitely do everything you can. Vote in those polls. Do your player and team stats. Do your recaps. Even though the recaps don't count as much, if you miss a poll or you miss a player stat, you can do all of your recaps and make up for those points.
So do what you need. Sec real quick. I don't know if some people don't know that are new to the league. Your stats. So once a game is played and once team stats are entered, after that, you only have 7 days to enter your player stats and do your coach report, and then you're locked out of it. So just a nice friendly heads up. Just do it all at once. Don't save it for later, because you're going to end up being locked out of it, and then you're losing out on points that you should have been able to get. Go ahead. Sorry. I just felt like I had to get that in there.
Oh, no. You good. But definitely get those in there. It's best to get those player stats, because your player could be up for an award and you don't even know it. Or you wouldn't even know that your player is up for an award because you don't know your stats. You don't know that particular player stats, or you don't know your team stats. You don't know what your ranking could be in the Massey. The Massey rankings hold a lot of value in the NDL. So get those stats in. Get those recaps in if you haven't done that already. Get those coaching reports done too. As much as you do the coaching reports and the polls and the stats, that all equals up to a higher point value. We don't want any of these new coaches that have joined the league to have 9-10 wins, but they're drafting 40th because they didn't do any of their stats or any of their polls or any of their coaching reports. We don't want that. We want you to completely thrive, because if you're picking 40th and you had a 10-win season with Louisiana Monroe, you're going to feel like you didn't do anything. Well, if you do what you need to do as far as your stats and your polls and your coaching reports, then everything else is going to take care of itself. And treat the coaching reports with respect as well. Just because it's a law of averages with the coaching reports, meaning it's the average of all your reports added up together, doesn't mean you need to break a rule here or possibly toe the line of breaking a rule. Just because you know hey, I got one I can mess up. I'm going to take this time out and mess it up. If you're a G5 coach, you don't have time for that. You don't need to do that because, like I said, some of these teams are at the bottom of the barrel. You need as much points as you can to get your way up to the top.
Yeah, participation points, the 40% of your coach contract, everyone should get that. Just 3 points. It's like attendance for class, just showing up, just sitting down, gets you 40% of your grade. The other exactly. Stuff is what it is, but that right there, and then just the last thing that I'll touch on, we're all competitive. We all like to win. Like, let's be honest, no one likes to lose, ever. But we're all competitive here. Just a friendly reminder, especially for people that are new to the league, I know it can be overwhelming. You see the rules. You have the coach reports. You're probably getting feedback from people after the game. Just be mindful of being competitive is fun. We're here to have fun, primarily, number one. But if you're going to be like that hardcore competitive guy, just remember to do it within the confines of the rules. Don't let winning supersede what the league represents. Because ultimately, we're here to have a good time. You have the Lick and a group of guys at the NDL convention this year. Years past, there was an NDL convention in Vegas. Like, as people are traveling across the country for various reasons, there's meetups held next year. We're going to have a meetup at WrestleMania. I don't even know what number it is right now, but I know it's in New Orleans. We're going to have a meetup there. Like, it's like winning in the grand scheme of things is nothing compared to what the NDL stands for and what it represents for a lot of us. It's all about the community. Community always comes first. It's just something to be mindful of, especially for people coming in that aren't familiar with us. Like, this is like the backbone of the league is community. That's what always comes first. It's always what's going to come first. And it's something to keep in the back of your head whenever you're playing games.
Definitely. There is no ball nor stat of the week. I did not prepare for one. I'm sorry. But there will be one next week.
All right. That sounds good. So I know you're a busy man. You have things that you have to do. I have edits that I have to do. Today's was a weird day. I woke up at 2:30 in the afternoon, so I'm way behind, as you probably saw. So I have stuff to work on. I know you have some stuff you need to do. So we'll call it here. Appreciate you being on as always. Appreciate you guys listening out there, and we'll see you next week.